This data shows results from a virus survey we conducted in 2007, a high aphid pressure year, at least for snapping. I took 100 leaf samples at emergence of both an early planted crop and a late planted crop. In Wisconsin, we can fit in two crops because snapping is a 60-day crop. So I took 100 leaf samples at each of the 15 fields, both at emergence and just before maturity or harvest. And I tested for the presence of AMV and CMV. These numbers are averages across the 15 fields. And notice that AMV incidence increases within the 60 days for each of the crop plantings, but CMV incidence dramatically increased at crop maturity primarily at the second planting. So to summarize, the soybean aphid does visit snapping along with other aphids. The soybean aphid peak flight occurs late July, early August. An increased virus incidence coincides with peak aphid flight periods. So moving on, now that we know that the soybean aphid will visit snapping, how well is it at being a vector of these viruses to snapping? To answer this question, we collected some field isolates of both AMV and CMV in snapbean. We established these isolates in a susceptible snapbean variety back in the greenhouse and used these infected plants as source plants for virus transmission studies. In the interest of time, I will only be showing a sample of these transmission assay studies. So this is a table showing the name of the isolate, the CMV transmission from snapbean to snapbean, and the number of successful transmissions in parentheses to the number of total plants used in that transmission assay. Also, you can see from the pie chart is CMV transmission, successful transmission for that particular isolate. So light blue will represent the number of healthy snapbean plants that did not get infected. And virus infection was verified using enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay, or ELISA. What I think is very interesting, actually, is that these two severe strains of CMV were very efficiently vectored by the soybean aphid. When we compare the number of transmission successes between the soybean aphid and rapalisiphon paddy, we see that the soybean aphid appears to be a more efficient vector of CMV. However, note that R. paddy still can transmit this virus. So from these transmission studies, we conclude that the soybean aphid is a competent vector of CMV and snapping. I haven't shown the data today, but it is also a competent vector in AMV. So we know that the soybean aphid visits snapping and can vector non-persistent viruses. For a virus epidemic to occur in a healthy snapbean field, a source of inoculum must reside somewhere in the environment for aphids to acquire and transmit. Previous studies in other commercial crops such as lettuce, cucurbits, and sweet pepper suggest that important virus reservoirs exist along field edges of these commercial fields. So when you look at what surrounds a typical commercial agricultural field in Wisconsin, you will often see volunteer forage legumes like red clover, bird's foot trefoil, alfalfa, and many times these forages appear symptomatic, as you see in this naturally infected red clover plant. So we decided to test whether plants within those field margins are naturally infected. We took leaf samples from forage plants within a 5-meter border surrounding 17 separate snapbean fields. And we focused on forages because they're members of the bean family, the secondary host of the soybean aphid. This survey was conducted for 2 years and across the state. We tested for the presence of AMV and CMV using ELISA. So AMV and CMV do naturally occur in these forage plants within the field margins. Virus incidence now is on the x-axis, percent of infected plants, and plant species by common name is listed on the y-axis. The number in parentheses corresponds to the total number of plants sampled for that particular species. And this is a summary across all those 17 fields. As you can see, AMV is quite common in the clovers and alfalfa, as well as other species. CMV, however, was only detected in small amounts, one sample in alfalfa, and just a few in hairy vetch. But remember, these viruses can infect many different plant species. So when we look at plant species outside of the bean family, we also find natural infections of both AMV and CMV. Interestingly, we detected high levels of CMV in eastern nightshade, which is an annual solanaceous weed often found in the plant rows along snapping fields. So in sum, AMV and CMV are two non-persistent viruses commonly detected in off-crop habitats like the field margins. They are also found in other agriculture crops like squash, potato, alfalfa. Now that we know that AMV and CMV resides in different plants within the field margins, does the soybean aphid visit these field margins? So in addition to monitoring the aphid flight activity and snappings, we also set up three additional water pan traps in the surrounding field margins within that 5-meter border for each of the bean fields. Again, traps were changed each week beginning in June until the very end of August. So this graph is showing the total aphid alate abundance across all fields and pan traps divided by week during the 2006 growing season. So yes, soybean aphid does visit these habitats. We see a peak flight in early August for the soybean aphid and a peak flight in mid-July for other aphids. Again, this is primarily the pea aphid. When we compare the numbers to the aphid counts we saw in snapping, flight patterns are similar in both habitats. With the y-axis on the same scale, it is apparent that aphid visitation is greater in snapping. What we saw in snapping fields was also similar to the flight patterns and field margins in 2007. Peak flights for all aphids occurred late July, early August. Notice the scale difference on the y-axis. We saw almost a 10-fold difference in aphid numbers between the habitats. So from the previous data, we can conclude that the soybean aphid, as well as other aphids, visit these weedy field margin habitats, where they could potentially acquire non-persistently transmitted viruses. Soybean aphid peak flights for both years occurred at the end of July, beginning of August. So if we put all the pieces of the puzzle together, what have we learned? The soybean aphid, along with other aphid species, visit snapping with peak soybean aphid flights in late July, early August. Virus incidence in snapping increased after these peak flights. Through our transmission studies, we were able to show that the soybean aphid is a competent vector of non-persistent viruses in snapping. These viruses are naturally present across the landscape, both in-crop and off-crop habitats. The soybean aphid and other aphids visit these field margins where these viruses naturally occur. Therefore, I can confidently say that the soybean aphid, as well as other aphid species, could potentially play an important role in each of these chance events that lead to a virus epidemic. I would like to thank the bean processors for letting me monitor in their fields. I especially want to thank Michigan State University and Iowa State University for their collaborative effort. I would also like to thank David Votlin and Doris Lagos for helping me with specimen identification. Finally, I would like to thank my lab, my committee, and my funding sources for this research opportunity. I do.
I don't think that they could be acquiring it further away and bringing it in.
They could be, but I haven't yet to prove it, but I'm hoping to, that it comes more, majority of the virus incidents comes from this small border surrounding a commercial field. Yes?
You get the symptoms on being in the process of being used. Does that plant have to be infected prior to flowering?
So infection can occur both prior and after flowering to get that pod, chocolate pod symptom. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Do you think of any possible benefit from for the sodium acid that is still getting the non-host plant?
I think it's more of, it seems to me, I see an abundant amount of soybean aphids as well as other aphids only at emergence. I think they cue in on this contrasting background, and where it's a benefit, that I'm not sure of. Thank you.
Thank you.
A number of factors are responsible for oblique banded leaf roller being really the most challenging fruit feeding or direct pest of apple in New York State. First of all, its life cycle is out of sync with that of most other orchard pests as it overwinters as a partly grown larva and begins feeding immediately in the spring as soon as the temperature is warm. So this ends up requiring extra pesticide applications specifically targeted against the summer populations. In addition, it has developed resistance to many of the conventional pesticide products, such as the OPs and pyrethroids, so effective management requires the use of selective specialty products, such as BT, insect growth regulators, microbials, etc. Even so, it's still very difficult to completely eliminate the damage from this pest. In high-pressure situations, which are many, fruit damage of 1 to 3% at harvest is considered common. It has capacity for long flights and some other behavioral traits that make it generally unsuitable for mating disruption. Together with this, we've had a fairly incomplete understanding of the role of such things as habitat, alternate hosts, adult movement, natural enemies, on the incidence of fruit infestation. For instance, overwintered larvae can often be found fairly easily in unmanaged or feral sites, but then the summer populations are negligible, and this is essentially the opposite of what occurs in commercial orchards. Sampling for larvae is not always a reliable indicator of population pressure. So for instance, in some previous studies, we attempted to eradicate the overwinter generation in 5-acre plots in order to eliminate summer population damage. But despite our ability to end up with extremely low larval numbers, both at bloom and then during the July sampling period, fruit damage occurred at harvest the same as before. So this year we set up trials with quite a bit larger plots and three commercial farms in western New York that had a history of OBLR infestation, and they ranged from 18 to 33 acres. The last two sites, the largest ones, were essentially self-contained whole farm units. We used an unrealistically aggressive early season program, once again, to eradicate the overwinter generation of larvae. The growers applied Intrepid at pink bud. At one site, the grower insisted on putting on Dipel at bloom because that's what he always does. And then at petal fall, the growers came back and applied Proclaim. And a couple of post-petal fall sampling sessions verified that we were, in fact, quite successful in virtually eliminating the larvae from these plantings. We monitored the summer generation of adults, at least the adult males, using a network of pheromone traps located at different orchard strata. So along the orchard edge, 20 to 30 meters in toward what we call the mid-interior, and then another 20 to 30 meters along toward the center. And we did this on all four ordinal sides of the farm. So this resulted in a 12-station double transect, cross transect, really, throughout the planting. We took weekly terminal and eventually fruit infestation samples at each of these stations, beginning in late June, counting 500 samples per station for a total of 6,000 per farm every week. And we informed the growers of the results of these weekly counts, and some of them even used this information for their management decisions. But our intention was really to come away with a good temporal and spatial picture of the summer larval reinfestation patterns in these plantings. So here are pictures of the sites where we worked. You can see that all of them have woods on